Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Over the Fence, a new podcast where gamers of the adventure persuasion come together and discuss the current state of the gaming and tech and entertainment world. I'm Patrick Morrow, and with me are...
Eric Ohl.
Chad Cush.
And Jeff Wise.
All right, so our first topic on our agenda today is there was recently an interview with Gabe Newell of Valve, and he had some very interesting things to say regarding Valve's profitability.
Okay, I think I'll jump on this because I've been among the longer tenured Valve fanboys on staff, but I'm so incredibly freaking excited about this. You have no idea. Valve has shown over the number of years that they've been able to, they've really been the guys who have pushed digital distribution. Most of what you see in the way of games being deployed via digital distribution is 100% purely to Valve and the success they've had with the Steam platform. It's had a really rocky start, obviously, but ever since then, it's on almost every gamer's computer. And frankly, the deals that they run just outclass any other retail way to get video games these days.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But I do find it definitely surprising that that they're out-profiting both Google and Apple. Admittedly, in the article, Gabe Newell mentions that it's per employee. So basically, in terms of actual bottom line, it's not the same. But for each person he has employed for him, they're making more than every individual person working for Apple or working for Google. And that alone is a very impressive stat when you look at the economics of all of this. It definitely shows that unlike many, many people who have their heads in the gutter, PC gaming is not dying. And that's what this just screams to me. Valve is continuing to innovate, and I just love it to death.
I mean, I've always been one that has said that, you know, really looking at iTunes, looking at Apple, that really Apple has a lot they can learn about digital distribution from Steam. And admittedly, it's a very different medium they're trying to work with. But regardless, you know, Steam really made this work. And Apple's really trying to make this work. And they're trying to introduce things that, to be honest, Steam does better. And it's funny, Apple introduced their sort of social networking component to iTunes recently. And
Ping was a failure.
Yeah, it didn't really take off because nobody really wanted or expected it. But
or
one
cared.
Of the big parts of Steam is how the social networking aspect of it actually works really well because it keeps gamers connected with each other.
And you definitely see a lot of that on the iDevices with Game Center. Game Center really does seem to evoke a very Steam-ish feeling with it. Admittedly, it's not near as featured, and I think it's kind of just there. I don't think it's quite as good as Apple wants us to think it is. But you can definitely tell that they're taking lessons from the guys who have been doing it before.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think Steam's success really lies in the fact that they understand that a digital copy of something really doesn't have any intrinsic physical value to it. It's just a data on a server somewhere, and that selling that for any price beyond the cost of whatever the bandwidth there is a profit for them. So if a game stops selling, they just, you know, have a sale over a weekend, sell the game for 75% off or some ridiculous thing like that, and, you know, instantly people are playing it again. It shows up on your friend list, all your friends, what they're playing, what games they've bought recently. And, you know, for games like Borderlands or something that's really multiplayer focused, it just encourages everyone else on your friend list who wants to play that game with you to buy those games also.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, having played Borderlands, having played actually a lot of Steam's games, I mean, you really see how much having Steam sort of social networking aspects really actually enhances the gameplay to the games bit by having, you got your buddy list there, you pull it up saying, hey, you know, I'm playing Borderlands, you know, I'm going to go do this quest, you know, do you want to come join me? You know, oh yeah, cool. And then he boots it up, you know, and it really makes the gameplay experience a lot better, actually, which is surprising because usually that kind of thing, not necessarily so.
Speaking of which, I need somebody to help me take down Mothrak if they're interested. but they've got a really it's really the integration between games and the platform. And one thing that really goes underrated, especially when it comes to Steam, is how nice and easy it is to access the Steam overlay, to access all your friends lists, news about the game, patch notes, as well as a bunch of other different features just by hitting shift tab on your keyboard. And it's instant. There's no delay. There's no lag. It's very well integrated with the platform. And instead of unlike, you know, alt tabbing out of a lot of the source games or other games that cause issues, you can just do a quick shift tab, bring up the overlay without having to close out the game and risk crashing it. I guess it's something that seems like it seems, you know, like it's obvious, but at the same time, nobody else has pulled it off.
Mm-hmm.
The closest I've seen is Xfire, and Xfire is not near as pretty as how Steam can pull it off.
Valve in general is just, I mean, we have a group of developers who, like, really know what they're doing. I mean, 99% of the time, fine, they have their flaws, everybody does, but, you know, I think if people are really pushing at least PC gaming, I'd say Valve, like, significantly.
Well, I don't know if you guys heard about this or not, but Portal 2, the PlayStation 3 version, has an option to link your Steam account with the PS3. And if you do that with the PS3 version of Portal 2, it unlocks the PC version of Portal 2 for free in your Steam list.
Console gamers, welcome to what we've had for the last 5 years.
So potentially that's a huge group of people who can be migrating over to Steam. So they know what they're doing at Valve.
Mm-hmm. Well, a very similar topic. I think it's about time we moved on to the next to our next bullet point and shifting over from Valve to Apple. Hey, Patrick, I heard you got yourself one of those new V phones. Why don't you talk about it a little
bit? Yes, I did. I have it in my hand. It's awesome. No, the Verizon iPhone finally came out. After, I guess what had happened was the AT&T's exclusive contract had expired, right? I'm a little foggy in the details, but people have been suspecting that this was going to happen for a very long time. And I guess when people suspect things are going to happen, that kind of makes them happen. That seems to be the way it works in the business world, from what I've seen.
Well, even from day one, we knew that the AT&T exclusivity contract was going to be up at some point.
Right,
There was no way the iPhone wasn't going to sell. It was just a matter of time.
Right.
So.
Yeah. But the surprising thing is, I remember when I heard that the iPhone was going to be out for Verizon, I thought to myself, this is great. You know, so many people that, you know, were on Verizon's network like me, who never got a chance to use the iPhone before, are now able to do it. They're going to get a lot more people buying the iPhone. But I'm hearing, I could be wrong, but there are rumors that that actually isn't so much the case, that it hasn't really been selling that significantly or as significantly as it was expected.
It really hasn't. A friend of mine who I'm not going to identify, is a Verizon employee and works in some stores. And he has been noticing that other than a lot of the day one, they sold a lot of pre-orders for the V phone, but after that, it basically just kind of trickled away, and everybody who wants an iPhone either already has one on AT&T's contract and can't get out of it, or they just don't care enough to get one, like me, who's perfectly happy with my iPod Touch. So it really was, you had the fanboys and the early adopters, and that was about it.
Yeah, there's also a suspicion, though, that what probably smart buyers might have done is looked at the Verizon iPhone and said, well, you know, the iPhone 5 will probably be coming out, in a couple months, and they're probably going to have a Verizon version as well. So why don't I just wait a couple months? And it was different for me because both my iPod and my phone were broken, so I needed a new one of each. So it just made sense.
Might as well come by.
Otherwise, I would have waited, but it was kind of urgent because that thing was actually falling apart. So, yeah. But, you know, what's interesting about the iPhone, why I'm excited about the idea of the iPhone getting out to more people is because, you know, as we all know, the iPhone gaming community is actually quite large, surprisingly. You wouldn't think that was the case, but, you know, with all sorts of games like Angry Birds that are just selling tons and tons and tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of copies to, you know, to users, you know, we have a significant sort of platform here, you know. Mm-hmm. A significant part of gaming as it
exists today. And it's not just the casual games. I mean, you look at it and sure, Doodle Jump and Angry Birds are amazing games and they can really only be pulled off this nicely on an iPod or iPhone. But at the same time, you have a surprising amount of what could be considered hardcore games that work so well on these devices. what was it, 2 weekends ago, there was a very large sale in the App Store, and I went on a spending spree, I'll admit. But I now own Madden 2011, I own Street Fighter 4, Ace Attorney, the first Phoenix Wright game, Devil May Cry 4, and on top of it, a brilliant port of NBA Jam, the newest version of it, admittedly,
yeah,
with some of the prettiest graphics I've ever seen on a mobile device, much less on a telephone, or in this case, MP3 player. So you've got the casual market, but then you also have this hardcore market, and you know, other games like Mirror's Edge, Civilization Revolution, indie games like Xenonia, which is a 40-hour RPG dungeon crawler that a Super Nintendo inspired dungeon crawler. Just what is coming out for this is, it's really kind of remarkable. And frankly, you know, Nintendo is coming out with the Nintendo 3DS in about a month. Sony has announced its NGP, Next Generation Portable, which will come out in the future-ish and be ridiculously expensive. But I don't care. I bought a Nintendo DS last fall after I got my current job, and I pick it up and play Pokemon once in a while. Otherwise, I'm playing games on my iPhone because I'm winning the Super Bowl, as the Packers, of course, and I'm playing NBA Jam on my iPhone, and it's so handy and it's so nice.
It's kind of funny that you mentioned Nintendo, because even with their new push towards WiiWare and DSiWare and the digital distribution of some little kind of apps, dial games, instead of like full-fledged releases, Nintendo even mentioned that they now feel that they're a direct competitor, in direct competition with Apple for some of this marketplace. And it'll be interesting to see how that evolves when the 3DS game market comes out and the releases there, if that's going to affect the price points of some of these games, considering that most of the iPhone apps are, you know, $1 to $5 or less, even free in a lot of cases. It'll be really interesting to see how that kind of competition heats up between those two companies.
And to stoke that fire just a little bit more, today, I saw it today while I was at work, Square Enix announced that it will be porting Final Fantasy III to the iPod within the next couple of months.
What? Like the DS?
Really?
Yeah, they ported Final Fantasy I and Final Fantasy II, and so the question became, well, for Final Fantasy III, which version are they going to port? And the version they're porting is the full 3D DS remake to the iDevices.
Wow.
So
I really like that.
There's a shot across the bow against Nintendo, and Apple is definitely with this move, I think, makes it a solid competitor for portable gamers with cash.
Oh, yeah. That's bizarre. Shall we move on to our next topic?
Yeah.
Right. Amusingly, our next topic also is partially connected to iGaming.
We were talking about how Telltale Games, the developer of many of the current adventure games, point-and-click games made in the style of classic point-and-click adventure games, but you know, they're mostly famous for Sam and Max. What have they done? They've done
Tales of Monkey Island.
The Island. My memory.
Strong Bad. Game for attractive people.
Yeah.
Right on.
Not to mention Puzzle Agent, which, by the way, I just found out they're going to be doing a sequel for.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Puzzle Agent 1 is fantastic.
It really is. It's fantastic. But anyway, the point is, Telltale Games has picked up the rights to publish a lot of interesting different titles based on movies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, they announced last year at some point that they were picking up the license to do Monkey Island and Jurassic Park and Back to the Future. And the first two episodes of Back to the Future just came out recently, so there's a few more episodes of that coming. But at this event, they just showed the first gameplay footage of their Jurassic Park game, which has a much more serious look at it. And I was really curious about this game at first because I wondered where in the timeline they were going to fit this game in. But it looks like it's taking place concurrently with the first Jurassic Park film, or book, depending on which perspective you want to look at it from, where you're following characters who are on the other side of the island doing other things while all the craziness is happening to the main characters of the film, Alan Grant and all of them.
Huh. Yeah, no, I did see the some of the concept art for that, and I was surprised to find that it does take much more dark and, I don't want to say realistic, but it is more realistic than what they're used to. they're used to sort of doing this much more stylized, not quite cartoony, but that kind of a look to the mm-hmm. games. You know, obviously Sam and Max, the Strong Bad games, has a very sort of stylized, sort of trying to make it look like it's Flash, even though it's not. And then, of course, Monkey Island has its very sort of stylized look to it. And even Back to the Future has a kind of a cartoony look to it. But this looks sort of like the in terms of the aesthetic, sort of the darkest thing that they've done so far.
Yeah, they're really taking a lot of branching out lately. I don't know if any of you played their poker game. Where
I have. I
wouldn't have believed you if you had told me about the concept behind that poker game where they're just pulling all these crazy characters from these other franchises. In fact, they joked that the game had more lawyers working on it than they had actual developers working on that particular game. Because, you know, you had Tycho from Penny Arcade and the Heavy from Team Fortress 2 and Strong Bad. And it's all these characters from other franchises that don't necessarily belong to Telltale. And it was kind of, other than that, it was just a standard poker game with a bunch of humor and funny quips between the characters. Which I think is Telltale's strong point, is their humor. So it'll be really interesting to see how they can handle a really serious game. I kind of think back of at the LucasArts Adventure Days when they were making all those adventure games, and they came out with all the Monkey Island games, and they had Loom and Full Throttle and Day of the Tentacle and Maniac Mansion and all of those.
And then LucasArts did have The Dig, which was a much more dark, serious game.
That's where I was going with that. Yeah,
yeah.
It was a very serious game next to all those other ones, and it was not quite as well received as some of their other games. It'll be kind of interesting to see how a serious game from Telltale is received.
The interesting thing about, because most of the developers who worked on a lot of those classic games actually ended up working at Telltale, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In fact, most of those people who worked on the old adventure games are Telltale employees at this point. That's why it was kind of ironic that they got the license to do Tales of Monkey Island, because it's like coming full circle for them.
Yeah, yeah. But that does make sense, though, you know.
Well, kind of branching the discussion a little bit forward, at the latest event, they did announce that they picked up the rights to two new comic book franchises this time. It's definitely a new direction for them, but the things that they'll be learning in Jurassic Park, definitely tell is going to set them up for the issues that they'll have to tackle in these two new licenses. And they are the graphic novel series The Walking Dead and Fables, which is a relatively newer series taking ancient or classic fairy tales like Little Red Riding Hood and stuff and setting them in modern day New York. I have not had a chance to read Fables, although I've really, really wanted to, but they're both very different and very dark storylines for a company that with Telltale's reputation be taking on. So I'm very curious and very excited to see where they'll be going with these new IPs.
Yeah.
Fables just seems like something Telltale would do anyway. Mm-hmm. They're always being very bizarre in the things they make.
They don't really branch out too much, though. I mean, other than everything Telltale has done to this point, with the exception of their first game, which was Telltale Texas Hold'em, has been based on some other existing IP. And they've all been fairly goofy ones. I mean, the darkest they ever got before this was maybe Bone. And obviously, original Sam & Max got pretty dark sometimes, but it still had that satirical humor behind it. But that's The Walking true. Dead and Fables are two very hardcore series. You're not going to find a whole lot of giggles in Walking Dead, and Fables is a dark retelling of already dark stories.
Didn't they have I'm pretty sure Telltale in their early days did I think a CSI game, if I'm not mistaken.
They did a bunch of CSI games.
Oh yeah, they did do those. I forgot those.
Yeah. And that pretty much had followed the structure of the TV shows and everything. We were solving an over-branching case that across picking out different clues from different scenes. But Telltale has kind of gotten this reputation of being able to handle just about any IP they pick up. It's really kind of interesting. One of the guys at Giant Bomb was mentioning that at a conference he was talking with some of the other developers, and he said, wouldn't it be cool if somebody... He said, what do you think of somebody making a sequel to Night Trap? You know, that old classic Sega CD game that's notorious for being that it is, and everyone kind of groans. And then they said, but what if it was developed by Telltale? And everyone kind of changes their tune, because you feel that Telltale could handle a project like that. They could handle just about anything that you threw at them.
Mm-hmm. They're a very competent group. Something interesting that I'm not sure if everybody knows, and I just want to say this, we're talking about Telltale picking up graphic novels. As it turns out, one of the original concepts for the Scott Pilgrim vs. the World game was actually, as it turns out, Telltale had come to Brian Lee O'Malley, the creator, and asked him if they could make an adventure game based on his work. And he actually turned them down because he said that wasn't really the direction he had in mind. And, you know, the beat-em-up, the beat-em-up that is done in the 8-bit style that we got was really good. I mean, I'm sure the other people here can attest that. It's a really fun game. But, mm-hmm. you know, just try to imagine, what would have Scott Pilgrim been like, you know, in the given the Telltale treatment, you know?
It's definitely something fun to ponder. Like, would they have gone with the 8-bit style? Would they have gone with kind of a 3D cartoony style, more based on the artwork of the book? There's a lot of directions that could have been gone, and all of them were pretty neat.
Okay, so we're going to take a brief break now, and we're going to present for you a musical piece composed by our very own Jeff Wise. Jeff Wise and I had actually collaborated on this piece, but as this is primarily Jeff's piece, I'll let him introduce it for us.
Yeah, so we're going to play a little piece here during the break. It's a piece composed by me and Patrick, as you just mentioned, and it's called Beyond the Barrier, and it's kind of a sort of a playoff of Over the Fence. And, well, I hope you enjoy it.
And that was Beyond the Barrier, a musical piece by Jeff Wise, arranged by yours truly. Some interesting backstory in that story. If you notice some similarities to our MIDI-licious title theme, you're not actually incorrect here. There's a bit of a story behind this. See, When we first agreed to do this podcast, we, as a team, came together and said, well, we're going to need a new theme song. So Jeff Wise composed one for us, and we weren't sure if it quite worked at first, but I said, you know, hey, Jeff, you know, we should develop this independently. So, you know, I rearranged it for him, and the two of us kept making modifications over time, and the end result is what you've all just heard.
Very nice.
So the reason they sound similar is because after the first version of the tune got rejected, I went and had to listen to it, and I took some of the sort of musical themes and ideas that Jeff had made in his piece and sort of made a new sort of faster, a little bit harder driven piece, sort of based on those ideas, but, you know, in it given a completely different light. That's the story of that piece of music. So welcome, everybody, back to part two of our first podcast. We have two new people here to discuss the gaming world with us today. We've wanted you to introduce yourselves.
All right, I'm Sean.
I'm David.
And good to have you guys here.
Yeah, they're going to be joining us for the rest of the discussion today. So, one firestorm of a controversy in the gaming world recently is, of course, the Fox News article that came out in which a psychologist was quoted as saying, sort of in short, this is paraphrasing, but basically made the point, the sort of graphic and suggestive themes that are in Bulletstorm. The person basically tried to make the claim that this kind of a video game will make people into rapists.
The sad thing is, when I hear about this, the only thing that can go through my mind is the Bedroom Intruder song. And I can't stop seriously without thinking about this.
You are a bad person.
Eric,
you disturb me. Wow.
Well, that's new to our new listeners, but not new to the rest of you.
That's true.
But I guess, in a way, I kind of see where she's coming from in that, you know, Bulletstorm is definitely an incredibly violent game. The problem is she's way over-sensationalizing it, and somebody just happened to pick up on it. It's really, I don't know.
Of course, is that really new for Fox?
Well, I'm not going to get into the merits of Fox News here. This isn't a war for it. I'm from Wisconsin, and we're in the middle of a war as it is, so I'm not getting political.
I was just saying, you know, it's kind of a thing.
But it's we've had this conversation before about the violence in video games conversation. This is nothing more than another reiteration of it.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, you know, I started playing Doom when I was 3 years old. Obviously, I have to be a serial killer.
Oh, well, I was Mario at the time when I was 3 years old. But
I was playing Mario, too, and missed, actually.
But the idea is still there. I mean, I guess the question that you got to pose to the panel is, do video games make you violent? And if they do, can they actually turn you into a rapist, as this article was claiming?
I think it's a bunch of bullshit.
Exactly.
Just saying.
Well, she's not.
I mean, I think the greater issue here is, of course, the But this sort of problem has dates back, because it's been a problem for a very long time. The fact that even though the rating system is there, and it is a very strong rating system, very clear, very easy to understand, people seem to not really give a shit. And a lot of times parents will just buy their kids stuff and say, oh, well, you know.
It really comes down to, it's the parents' job to take responsibility for what their children are consuming, especially in the media. And
seriously,
if you are not being an informed parent with what you are buying your children or letting your children buy, then the blame doesn't fall on the game manufacturers. It doesn't fall on anybody else, because the information is out there and it's for you to learn and find out. I mean, this is a parental responsibility thing. And
all right. Yeah. So I worked at a GameStop for 3.5 years back while I was in college, and the very first week that I worked was the week that Grand Theft Auto San Andreas came out on the PS2. And just to kind of make a little side story, the shipment for that game was running late from the UPS guy or whoever's delivering the copies of the games, and the people in the line were getting pretty grouchy, and they really wanted their game. And one of the promotional items that Rockstar had sent us to give out with the game was these little baseball bats, these miniature baseball bats, and we thought that seemed like a really bad idea to give those to a bunch of angry customers at the time while they're waiting in line.
Yeah.
But the thing that really struck me is that the very first person waiting in line to buy their copy of Grand Theft Auto was this little 13-year-old kid, and he had his parents' permission to pick up the game. The parents had come in and talked with all of us and signed his receipt, giving their permission for him to purchase this game. And that kind of really struck with me. It's one of those things where you wonder if these parents are really aware of all the content. I think of that Penny Arcade comic where the where the kid's talking to the mother and the store is like, oh, can I get this blood-drinking hell guys? And the mother asks, well, what's this big M on the box here? And he's like, oh, that stands for monkeys. And she's like, oh, well, that sounds okay. Like, wait a minute, you're not killing these monkeys, are you? But...
Yeah.
The idea that parents might be a little bit aware of what the content of the games are, but I don't think they fully grasp the full, a lot of parents seem awfully surprised when I describe to them when they're buying games like Grand Theft Auto or Saints Row. You do know that in this game there are, this game features, drug use, prostitution, extreme violence and, sociopathic behavior, and they seem kind of surprised and shocked when you list off this list of horrible atrocities in their mind about, and this is a game that the kids want to play. But I don't know how well the ESRB has done their job with kind of getting the word out. I mean, they have things posted all over the store, but I think parents here aren't aware of the rating system because they're just not interested in the video games in the first place. They just see it as that's something that my kid is interested in, so I'm going to go take him to the store and let him pick out a game because he knows more about these games than I do.
That's just a recipe for disaster. You don't send your kid to the grocery store to tell him buy a decent meal for yourself tonight because you know he's going to buy potato chips, ice cream, and candy bars.
Woohoo!
Yeah, but food is something everyone cares about.
Okay, it's not a perfect analogy, but you kind of get what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Different than buying, buying or renting movies for your kid to see. I mean, you check the rating on it to make sure that it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. It's the same exact thing.
And on top of that, it has, you got to take into consideration these games. They're the violent games, whatever, sell in the millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions, only the tiniest fraction of those players ever show this kind of behavior. So, obviously, if there is a connection, it does not apply to most people. Mm-hmm. If you go out and become, a murderer or a rapist, there were already other problems there.
Exactly.
She needed to be addressed in the first place, yeah.
Exactly.
She's probably not even taking those into account.
Do you guys remember, everybody of course remembers the man who murdered John Lennon. They found in his possession a copy of Catcher in the Rye. Are we supposed to assume that Catcher in the Rye makes people into murderers that are going to go kill celebrities? No, I mean, again... It's really an issue, if there are people that are doing things like this, then there was an issue that was already there and that probably needed to get addressed. And people shouldn't try to find other things to put the blame on. There needs to be a certain amount of responsibility that, it's crazy. I mean, these companies make it very clear what their game content is.
Mm-hmm.
They make it very clear what this audience is supposed to be. And then when these companies get blamed for making the games in the first place, I think that's not fair because they made it very clear from the get-go what kind of a game this is going to be.
Well, when I was still living at home for the past couple of years, I've been playing Team Fortress 2, and TF2 is a relatively violent game with a mature rating. I mean, admittedly, it's cartoony, but it is also bloody and a little bit gory, and
it's cartoony,
very much
and then your arm flies off and blood goes everywhere, and then an arrow comes to you and says, hey, this is a piece of you!
Yeah, and I wasn't allowed to play it during most daylight hours because I have two younger brothers, one of whom, at the time I got it, was only 11 or 12 years old. So my parents took the initiative and saw, it's perfectly fine for me to play it, and they were okay with my other brother, who is now 18, and it was fine for him to play it with me, because he was a bit mature. But for my youngest brother to sit and watch us as we blow people's heads off in this cartoony, over-the-top action game, that didn't sit well with my parents. You know, not to brag, but that's good parenting,
yeah,
doing what it needs to be. And
right.
Yeah, well, yeah. And, you know, it's like you got screwed-up people in the world, you know? I don't think that just simply sitting down and playing a video game or watching a film or something is going to screw them up. I mean, most people can comprehend the difference between fiction and reality. And I mean, obviously parenting plays into that because, you know, the whole, you know, child age thing. But that's not really up to the government to, you know, regulate. I mean, if someone goes out and starts murdering people, I think they had more issues than just playing a video game.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. The only time that...
And someone should have noticed really that in the first place.
Yeah.
The only time it's really a problem is when there's already something psychologically wrong with the kid and the parents don't act responsibly when deciding what they play and what they watch. That's the only time there's ever a problem. If one or the other does not exist, then most of the time, you wind up with a perfectly regular person.
Admittedly, the psychology of it is a little bit beyond the scope of both my education and this show. But but the point still stands. Video games might play a part in it, but at the same time, video games are not going to be the root cause of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just common sense, you know. Parents are supposed to parent their children. It's kind of part of the definition.
Yeah. But, I mean, the thing about the ESRB ratings...
That's a novel concept.
The ratings are actually... It's a very good system. It's very clear. Mm-hmm. And it's actually sometimes sort of easier to discern what exactly the content of something sort of than what the movie ratings are. Because you get a link to something, you go on the site, and it has a complete list of the plot, why the game is rated what it is. You know, and that...
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes in movies as well, but sometimes it can be a little bit more ambiguous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, like on video games, generally it clearly states, you know, it says violence or cartoon violence or blood and gore or, you know, sexual undertones or, you know, anything under the sun, really. If it's in the game, it's listed right on the box.
And sometimes when you load it up, it even says it again before it loads into the screen. Yes. So it's like... We're telling you, but, okay.
Hey, what's nice about the...
All over the place.
Exactly.
What's nice about
the... Online games, you know, it says experience may be subject to change in online experiences, you know.
I mean, to be fair, they are required to do that, but yeah, I mean. But it's true, though, you know, because you never know when some foul mouth is going to, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a way of saying, hey, you know what, we're covering our asses here because we don't know, you know. We don't know if some crazy lunatic is going to... No, but what's nice about the video game industry is that, you know, it used to be when video games were younger, you know, the 90s, it used to be that every time there was a violent video game, everybody would freak the hell out.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that, or, you know, every time there was, like, a shooting, and it turns out that, oh, you know, the criminal involved in this, you know, the shooter was a video game fan. Oh, my God, video games cause violence! And that would happen all the time. I mean, you could probably name, like, off the top of your head, like, five times in your memory that that's happened. And that doesn't really happen so much anymore. I mean, there was the recent shooting, and that kind of happened, but surprisingly, it didn't actually take off that much.
Yeah, and I think what people conveniently left out every time is that, yeah, sure, maybe that person happened to be into violent video games, but...
But so am I, and
so is, like, half the country.
What's interesting about this particular
kids going out shooting up their schools?
What's interesting about this particular case, though, is, of course, because they're focusing on Bulletstorm specifically. And it's not even just violent video games cause rape. You know, it's, of course, the fact that, you know, Bulletstorm, as you guys probably know, you know, has the sort of the skill kills and, you know, each sort of, you know, skill style has its own sort of name. And one of them was gangbang. And that's the kind of thing they're pointing to and saying, see, we're encouraging people to do, you know, bad sexual things. You know, we're going to see, I believe there's one part of the article where they pretty much say, after this game comes out, we're going to see an increase in sexual violence. And I was just, oh.
No.
You know,
And the worst part is their specific excuse is obviously meant to be kind of a tongue-in-cheek, if admittedly, you know, foul-mouthed, gory, and dirty tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, you know, I don't appreciate the humor, but I can at least see that it's an attempt at humor.
In the style of Borderlands or lots of other games that have come before, Duke Nukem 3D even. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Anyway, but on the other end of the spectrum, the interesting thing is that recently there was a study done a few months ago, that basically found that violent video games surprisingly can actually promote civic behaviors. And this kind of makes sense intuitively. You know, if you're talking about something like Call of Duty, you know, the amount of teamwork that actually has to go into that is actually, there's a surprisingly, you know, it really does build team building. And that's basically what the study was saying. It was posted on Kotaku, and I think it was posted in other places too. So, you know, but you know, really, really interesting, fascinating. No?
Yeah. Well, and like Team Fortress, for example, just as another team game, I mean, it has team right in the name, first off, and it's built heavily around team play. You know, you've got your various classes that have to work together in an organized fashion in order to complete an objective.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to end our show with a little segment we like to call What Have You Been Playing Recently? So we're going to go around, start with Eric.
Well, I've been playing two games lately. I've been replaying Mass Effect 2, just kind of getting started. But the majority of my time has been dominated by League of Legends. And for those of you who don't know it, it is a... it's basically a spinoff of a mod for Warcraft 3 called Defense of the Ancients. A couple of the creators of that map basically formed their own software company, made League of Legends, and it is a competitive online kind of a battle arena game with a lot of strategy. It's a lot of team-based play, great cartoony visuals, and it's just a blast. I love playing it, and it's been my strategic and my competitive outlet as of late. So. If anybody wants to hit me up, look up Alhan Tiravin on League of Legends. I'll play with you.
I know that my brother used to be a Dota addict, so...
Definitely check it out, because it's a blast. I never played Dota. My friends got me into just straight into League of Legends, but I found out I'm a very, very good tank. I love playing with tanks.
Isn't Valve doing a Dota 2, I believe?
They are. I've heard mixed things as to how well development's going. But they are coming out with a Dota 2. We'll see what the marketplace looks like because, you know, Dota 2 and League of Legends, as well as another similar game called Heroes of New Earth, they all basically have the exact same gameplay and the same premise. You know, slightly different styles and tweaks in each one. But it's going to be interesting to see how Valve is going to approach this, especially with solid competitors already in the arena.
Yeah. All right. Who wants to go next?
Oh, I'll chime in. I haven't been actually playing anything super new recently. I've been replaying through Mass Effect 2 like Eric, but other than that, just my ancient fallback on Star Wars Galaxies.
Oh, you poor soul.
Yeah. Indeed.
This kid, that's right, folks. This kid actually plays Star Wars Galaxies.
Don't worry, we'll convert him into the Old Republic when it comes out. Yeah.
Now, I'm the Old Republic,
Guild Wars 2. I've gotten into the first Guild Wars, so I don't know about that. But as far as Knights of the Old Republic goes, I have high hopes for that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm not getting them too high.
Which is probably advisable.
Star Wars video games haven't had a good track record as of late. I miss the days of Episode 1 Racer and Republic Commando and the Battlefronts and back when the games were good. Anyway,
I loved Republic Commando. I loved Jedi Outcast as well.
Mm-hmm. Jedi Outcast was supposed to be a really good game. I've never
played it. Oh, yeah, it was awesome.
My personal favorite always has been and always will be Rogue Squadron.
Oh, my goodness.
Nice choice.
To kind of show my age, the first video game that I actually went out and bought for myself and played on my first computer, just to kind of show how old I really am, was TIE Fighter.
Oh, my God.
And I beat it 100%.
Oh, my God.
And trust me, I don't think I've played a harder game since, but I was proud of myself playing that one.
Oh my God, that's pretty intense.
I want a remake of TIE Fighter so bad.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
It could look so pretty. But anyway, Sorry for kind of taking over, Dalkin.
Yeah, that's all right. That's about it. I've been playing a little bit of WoW on the side, but...
Hate you.
You're in WoW?
Yeah, I don't play it, like, you know, all the time. It's just kind of, you know, a side thing.
How did I miss you getting into WoW? Jeez.
Anyway. I know. I've kind of picked it up on and off over the years, but starting since this last summer... I've actually been playing it more regularly, so I actually have my main is a Blood Elf Mage. Yeah, I know.
No, I but, totally agree. My main is a Blood Elf Paladin. Woohoo!
Almost up to 85. I'm about halfway through 84 right now with him, and then I've also got my nice new shiny Worgen Hunter on Sisters of Wound.
The longer this discussion gets, the more I begin to feel like a fat person with Cheez-It-covered fingers.
That is okay.
I would start noting the South Park episode, but I think that's a little...
Really, I've been wanting, once I pick up the money, I've been wanting to pick up something like Assassin's Creed 2. But also, I have my eyes on some of the games coming out, like Portal 2 and...
The cake.
Actually, that one in particular. But, yeah, that's pretty much all I've been up to lately.
I know what Sean's been playing. It rhymes with Mime Daft.
Oh, that's something I've been playing as well. Minecraft.
Oh!
But I'll let Sean talk about
it. I've been able to stay away from Minecraft so far, so.
That is a sad, sad thing, Eric.
I've been able to stay away from it, too, so I must be in the same boat.
Go ahead, yeah, Sean.
My excuse is I have a life, so, you know.
Gamers don't have lives, you silly, silly man.
Yeah.
So, whoever said I was a gamer.
I'm officially calling this Sean's turn now, so.
Okay,
if you have anything else you want to talk about, you know, now is your chance.
I have been playing Minecraft a lot. I jump in. Maybe once a day, every other day. Pretty consistently. But as far as, like, the main game I'm playing as of right now, I suppose, I would probably have to say the Back to the Future game.
Oh, yeah, the Telltales.
Yeah, I picked that up, and Episode 2 came out about a week ago or so, and I've been trying to get through that, which it's still amazing as the first episode was, possibly even more so, but it is a lot harder than the first episode was.
Mm. That's good. I heard a few complaints about how easy episode one was, so it's good episode to see that one, they're working up.
Yeah, episode one was pretty easy, and while the one thing that I'm not sure I like... about the way Telltale does their adventure games is that they've set it up, and this could be a good thing or a bad thing, such that it is impossible to either get stuck or die.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, the events in the game will basically just keep looping infinitely until you get the answer right.
Huh.
And now, sometimes that means figuring out the combination of items you have to collect and what to do with them. So it's not like you just go through every possible combination. It's harder than that. But I'm remembering, when I think of an adventure game, I'm remembering like Space Quest and King's Quest, where if you did something wrong, you died in a brilliant, flamboyant fashion, and then the game would berate you because of it. Only to go right back in and try again.
I miss that.
I'm waiting to get into the Back to the Future action until either number one, it goes on sale, and number two, I've actually had a chance to go rewatch the Back to the Future trilogy first.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while. I rewatched the trilogy before I played the first one.
Wise
Chad, enough. Chad, you haven't gone yet. Do you wanna?
Sure. Well, mostly because mine's probably the shortest. I haven't played anything recently, but. In the past week, but I did replay through Jack and Daxter.
Oh, wow.
Which
I approve.
Was, for me, probably one of the funnest things I've ever done, because I've only played through that, counting this time, twice. And I don't know why, because that's such an epic game and so much fun. So that's what I've been playing. I am going to, I guess I could mention what I am going to start playing tonight. I am going to try a MMO called Aion.
Oh, I've heard a lot of people playing Aion lately.
Yeah. It looks really good and a little different from WoW, so I finally decided, you know what, I'm just going to try it, because I haven't tried many MMOs aside from WoW and Star Wars Galaxies, which is an abomination, but yeah.
Well, in other MMOs, as of this afternoon, Rift also just came out, and that is a fantasy MMO that's gotten a lot of good press lately.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, something definitely keep an eye out on.
Oh, I'm going to try that too, believe me.
Does it have a trial, do you know?
What, Aion or Rift?
Rift.
I believe so, but I don't know for sure. I kind of was just looking up, just looking at a little info on it on my break today, so I don't have a whole lot on it, but definitely still something to look at. Rift.
Yeah, I knew it was coming out soon, but I haven't looked into it at all.
And we haven't heard from you yet, Patrick.
Yeah, okay. So as for me, I've been sort of still getting through my Christmas presents. You know, not a bunch of presents. And I've been kind of playing them on and off. In Mass Effect 2, I should point out that I played Mass Effect 1 for the first time over my Christmas break. And,
nice.
Oh my god, wow. So, you know, of course, Mass Effect 2, which surprisingly runs better than the first one.
It's a lot nicer optimized. I noticed that too.
Is, of course, incredible, amazing, wonderful. And I finished the main part of that story, but there's, of course, the DLC stuff that, you know, I have yet to do, the Shadow Broker, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, other games that I'm still trying to get through are Oblivion, which I got from a friend of mine for Christmas. The World Ends With You, which somebody else got me. Not actually for Christmas, but I only started it recently. And I haven't gotten very far in that.
My anime con friends all have been bragging to me about how wonderful World Ends With You is. And so it's on my list of to play.
I also have been playing Braid, which is a really strange game.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful and dark and weird and simplistic all at the same time.
Sounds great.
Yeah. And I recommend anybody that wants to have a good proper mindfuck, check it out.
Tasty.
Oh, you're so gross.
Okay, well, that just wraps up episode 1 of Over the Fence. Yay!
Woohoo!
So, once again, this has been Patrick Morrow.
I'm Eric Olp, and Fezzes are cool.
I'm Chad Cush, and oh boy.
I'm Sean Hammond.
I'm David Natural, and I like steampunk.
Take care, everyone. We need to get Sean in on this, though, so maybe we should start prodding him. Prod.
It was me and my friend at Anime Milwaukee, and we're like, we wanted to play Rock Band because I haven't played Rock Band 3 yet, and it's all filled up with lines. So it's like, hey, and so it's like Jason walks in front of the TV because it's in between songs, and it picks him up, and so he like looks at it, and it starts going. So he just kind of starts doing the moves. We were probably the two whitest guys in Milwaukee trying to dance, but I don't care.
Only real men can pull off pink.
Right. Hey. Hello. So,
hello.
Oh, good. Okay. So, we're sorry we couldn't wait. We already recorded the first half of it, but you get to talk about the fun part, rape. So,
all right.
Rape! This is gonna be the greatest story ever!
Objection!